and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, we're hearing the 2018 economic forecast for Anchorage, presented by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. We'll first hear from AEDC President and CEO Bill Popp as he presents the economic forecast. Later in the program, we'll hear from keynote speakers Joe Marushak of ConocoPhillips Alaska and Ron Duncan of GCI. This event took place on January 31st at the Dena'ina Center. You can find links to the forecast itself and to the Business Confidence Index and more on our website, alaskapublic.org. We go now to Bill Popp with this year's forecast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time to turn to our 2018 economic forecast for Anchorage. Now today, AEDC will present a series of key facts and observations describing how the Anchorage community and economy fared in 2017, what business leaders and consumers are thinking about our economy and community, and what AEDC believes the future will look like in 2018 for the Anchorage economy. Now I'm going to start off right away by telling you that this is the Cliff Notes version of all of these different reports. You're going to be able to find all of these at aedcweb.com. There is a huge amount of data that I don't have the time to cover today. If you guys would let me, we'd spend a couple of hours, but I have a feeling you need to get back to work. So this is going to be the 20 to 25 minute version of these different reports. We're going to try and touch on everything and give you a sense of what's going on in the Anchorage economy today. So let's go ahead and get going. First of all, we want to start with the Live, Work, Play report card. This is important in the fact that you want to pull out your copy of Strive magazine. It was at your table. And inside Strive magazine is a Live, Work, Play report card copy that's a pullout that you can follow along if you would like to in regards to the data that I'm about to cover. Live, Work, Play is the vision of Anchorage Economic Development Corporation's Board of Directors to make Anchorage the number one city in America to live, work, and play by 2025. Our mission is to try and create an environment and ecosystem that attracts and retains workforce both locally grown and brought in from outside of Anchorage, because that's one of our biggest challenges, is the ability to attract and retain workforce or to grow it ourselves. So the vision is to work on different elements of our community that are important to Generation Next, the generation that is coming up in ascendancy that will soon be leading our companies in the next few years, that will be key players in making our economy successful, and will make sure that I will be happy living here in my retirement because the city is going to be a great city to retire in. So I'm counting on the millennials and Generation Next in this room to step up, and Live, Work, Play is our effort to make sure that they have a reason to step up. So let's dive into the report card. These are a series of metrics, and the print is very small. I get that. That's why we put the printed versions out there at your desk, or at your table, I should say. And the idea is to give you some quantitative metrics that measure Anchorage against the largest city in each of the other 49 states and District of Columbia. It's not a perfect model. I will say that right up front. But what it does do is it gives us a sense of direction. Are we making progress compared to our competitors? Are we falling behind, or are we just treading water? So the live metrics, we declined two spots from 27th to 29th. And our challenges there were the higher costs of housing in our community versus the other cities across the United States were key issues, as well as a declining amount of citizens in our community covered by health care, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Those are the two challenges that drove us down a couple of points. We've already got challenges in regards to property crime and violent crime, although we did see a slight uptick in our standing compared to the other cities across the country on the violent crime measure. We moved up several points. It is a trailing three-year average of the FBI statistics from 14 to 16. So it did not count what happened in 2017 because that data is not available yet on both of those statistics. But it does give us a sense that we continue to have a big problem with property crime in our city, which is a challenge that I know the city is rising up to meet with the increased law enforcement presence that we now have in our community. And then the violent crime stats, which covers any number of things besides the splashy headline stories about murders in our community, that covers things like the scourge of sexual assault and domestic violence and the other types of assault and battery type crimes that are counted in those statistics. Those are challenges for us, and we need to continue to work on them. But we did lose two spots on the live metric. When it comes to work, we treaded water at 17th. We had some challenges, but we also had some positives. The challenges had to do with our recession. our increased unemployment rate, which only went up modestly, but in the face of all of these other cities across the United States that are taking part in the great economic surge that is going on in the lower 48 states, conspired against us to make up any ground there. However, we did see some positive numbers in regards to a couple of other metrics, in particular, portion of our population over the age 25 with a bachelor's degree. We'd like to attribute some of that to our good friends at the University of Alaska, as well as other higher education facilities that are helping us on that front. But we didn't gain any ground, we didn't lose any ground. It is important to note that 5 years ago, we were second in this category when we were in boom times. When we look at the play metrics, we dropped 8 positions. We went from 12th to 20th. And the major issue there had to do with not so much the outdoor activities that make Anchorage a great city to play in. Those all stayed relatively solid and in good standing in our competition with the rest of the cities across the United States. But it was the indoor arts and creative portion of our community that suffered. A decline in the number of people working in those types of businesses, a decline in those types of businesses, and both of those definitely drug us down. And whereas we're seeing a resurgence in those areas in other cities across the United States, thanks to the growing national economy, our recession definitely had an impact on this. So we lost 8 positions. So overall, I would leave you with this. We've got a lot of work to do if we're going to hit our vision of number one city in America to live, work, and play by 2025. All of you in this room play a role in that, whether you know it or not. All of you can be more active in it if you choose to be. We'd love to have your companies on board. We'd love to get you in volunteer positions helping us in the different efforts that we're embarking on. We have a great strategy for the coming year that you can learn about by going to aedcweb.com and reaching out to our Live, Work, Play director, Moira Gallagher, who will be more than happy to have a conversation with you about how you can become involved. So now let's turn to the jobs update for last year. We need to know where we're coming from to know where we're going in the coming year. So simply put, we lost 2,100 jobs last year. That's a 1.4% decline in our job base. This is actually a little bit below what we had projected. We had thought we were going to lose 2,400 jobs. That was our projection at the beginning of last year. So that's a positive sign. When we look at unemployment, it was 5.7%. That was about a 0.4% uptick. Definitely not proportional to the number of jobs that we lost. We'll talk about that when we get into the population data in just a moment. So let's look at the next data set. Who was up last year? You know, I've been saying this since 2007. Healthcare saw an increase in jobs. Ever since I started this job, every year, healthcare is one of our top performers. That's great. I love it. And we need something growing in our economy, and it's positive to see these kinds of numbers in an industry that does pay a fairly decent wage. And so the challenge, though, is that we are fighting some issues with the cost of healthcare, which we'll talk about when we get into the 2018 projection. I bet you'll not guess where healthcare is going to go in 18. All right, so who was flat this year? Transportation. We had good numbers at the Port of Anchorage. We had good numbers at the airport. We had generally good numbers in terms of our ocean transportation. We had reasonable numbers in our trucking industry. So we basically remained flat in this sector. And remember, flat is good. So in the depths of a recession, this was a positive outcome. Who lost last year? Everybody else. That's a simple way to put it. But here's the thing. The industry leaders, like the industry losers that led with the biggest losses in 2016, saw their losses moderate dramatically. As an example, professional and business services lost 600 jobs last year. They lost 1,400 jobs in 2016. And we are seeing narrowing in the final months of 2017 that are leading us into a different perspective for 2018, which we'll talk about in a moment. Construction was also down, but down less than it was the year before. Leisure and hospitality saw a minor loss. Oil and gas saw substantially less losses in Anchorage in 2017 versus 2016 in the headquarters jobs and jobs based here within our city limits. Overall, we saw the same trend on a statewide basis. So that's a positive sign in those anchor industry jobs that help to anchor our economy firmly and provide the foundation. Still not the story we want to see, which is growth, but definitely an improvement from where we were. Retail was down about 300. This is prior to the bad news we've been reading in the last couple of weeks. We'll talk about that more on the projection. Financial activities down a little bit. That's been an ongoing trend. Government down 400, spread across federal, state, and local. And then other sectors made up the difference of another 400 jobs lost in several other smaller sectors. So let's talk about a couple of quick numbers. Housing. We do know that housing numbers for units sold last year, according to preliminary MLS data, was definitely a good year. Wasn't the greatest year, but definitely nowhere near the worst. Well within the five-year average, housing market remains very solid, especially when you look at the average sale price, within $1,500 last year of the peak year of 2015. So the housing market remains stable. It's a tight inventory in housing. We are seeing some green shoots on the construction side, over 500 units of housing being built last year, but we've got a long way to go to start really kicking that into higher gear because we've still got a fairly significant amount of pent-up demand of people looking for housing that's not meeting their expectations and what's available in the local marketplace. Bankruptcies were up slightly, but they were up as an aggregate number. We saw a modest increase in personal bankruptcies, but a decline in commercial bankruptcies. So well within the bounds of the last 4 years, barely up over last year, and continuing to be a solid indicator that the underlying foundations of our economy remain strong. Now let's talk about what all these numbers have meant to the confidence of business. We survey businesses every fall in November and December. We had 338 businesses respond to this year's survey, asking them a series of questions, many of which I can't go into because we just don't have enough time, but we'll hit the highlights. We ask for the indicator number, the big number, several questions like how are your gross sales going to do this year, up or down? How are your profits going to do, up or down? Sentiment really didn't change from 16 to 17. Basically, yeah, it'll be up a little bit, and that's on both of them. Are you going to hire more people? Are you going to make investments in capital expenditures? Not really any kind of significant change either, and kind of in the middle. Remember, it's on a scale of 1 to 100. Anything over 50 is optimistic. Anything under 50 is pessimistic. This is kind of right smack dab in the middle, so it's kind of ambivalent, I think is a good word. Here's the kicker. How's the Anchorage economy going to do next year? Definitely in negative territory at 42, but up almost 9 points from last year. That's a pretty significant change in sentiment. So there's some improving numbers on this particular one, but still markedly pessimistic in terms of it's definitely not saying, yay, happy days are here again, but it's definitely giving a sense that we're starting to see some improvement in attitude towards the future of the economy, but we've got a little ways to go. The aggregate number of all of these is 51.3, basically just a fraction above last year. We're still in the middle. Overall, we are kind of ambivalent about what's going on around us. We're feeling okay about ourselves as business people and our businesses, but we're not feeling so good about what's going on around us. So some of the issues that we want to talk about, we ask some basic questions. What are the biggest barriers to growth for your business in the next year? The condition of the state economy, by far, no doubt about it. Cost of health insurance. This percentage went up pretty substantially from the previous year. Energy prices, and in our talks with business leaders and some of the survey samples that we've seen, we believe that what's driving this to third place is the increased cost of electricity for some of the ratepayers here in Anchorage. We think that that's a fairly significant component of that particular issue as a barrier to growth. Gasoline prices are up a little bit. Diesel's up a little bit, but overall, the rest, natural gas, those are not issues. Telephone rates are still relatively stable. Availability of professional and technical workforce, the fourth biggest barrier to growth, and not an insubstantial percentage, almost 60%. So think about that. We're in the midst of the second year of a recession, and we're still complaining about lack of availability of workforce. There's pent-up demand out there, and we're having a hard time competing both locally and nationally for the kind of workforce that's needed to fill those jobs. How are we going to solve that problem? And then tied for fifth is federal regulations and public safety in Anchorage. When we look at the most important issues for Anchorage's economy to work on, in effect, number one is a sustainable state of Alaska operating budget. Not even close to anything else. Nothing else is even close. That's the issue. Business needs certainty, and the state government is not giving that to the business community. And until business can pencil out what their taxes are going to be, because nobody can say they know what they're going to be because the legislature and the governor can't seem to come together on an answer, this uncertainty continues to keep money on the sidelines. Hence the reason that it is the number one issue. Reducing the cost of health care, that's what I was talking about when I talked about the ever-growing workforce in health care. As we start to hopefully address the issues of the high cost of healthcare in our city, in our state, third most expensive city in the United States, according to the cost of living index on the cost of healthcare, Juneau's number one, Fairbanks is number two, Kodiak is number four, you get a trend there. These are the challenges that we face, and as we start to address those issues, it could impact the job base in healthcare. So there's issues we have to balance there as we try to come up with the solutions that are going to be necessary to make this less of a problem for business. Declining North Slope production, business gets it. It's not about the price of oil. It's about the number of barrels we're putting in the pipeline, because the old dynamic of hoping for a dust-up to jack prices up to $90, $100 a barrel, probably not going to happen. And even if it did, it wouldn't come close to solving our problems. We need more barrels in the pipe, and that's what business thinks. Community and neighborhood safety, we've already talked about that. That's an issue that is being addressed. We all play a role in that. We all need to be thinking about how we can help our police and our community to be safer, how we can be more vigilant about what's going on around us, and not letting crime go by without reporting it. And then finally, attracting new business to Anchorage and helping existing businesses. We're basically in a tie for that last position, and then you can see the rest of the items. That's our Business Confidence Index. Let's touch really quickly on the Anchorage Consumer Optimism Index. It went up. It got back up into somewhat positive territory. This survey is done quarterly. It is generously sponsored by our good friends at Key Bank, and we get the work done by our good friends at Northern Economics. By the way, the BCI is done by our good friends in the McDowell Group. What we saw was a significantly marked improvement out of negative territory into positive territory for the Consumer Optimism Index. You can see there the trending that's been going on, and you can see how marked that improvement was. News about the tax legislation at the federal level, news about ANWR, potentially the news about the gas line that took place in that latter part of the year, other things that are going on, announcements from other companies about new investments, probably affected this. So let's look at the basic questions that are asked. What's your local confidence in the local economy? It's basically a little above into the positive territory. Personal financial confidence increased again. It's been tracking consistently between 62 and 67, both before the recession and during the recession. People are feeling good about themselves, about where their ability to have a place to live, food on the table, clothes on their back, kids in school, all those kinds of things. Future expectations, this was markedly lower in the previous survey. It's basically bumped up into we're not sure. We're neither pessimistic nor optimistic. So that's what made up that metric. So now let's go through the jobs. I'm going to start out by just talking about unemployment right quick. I know, really small print. But this last year ended with a 6.9% average unemployment rate for the year for Alaska, 5.7 for Anchorage, and 4.4 nationally. 4.4%. That's how hot the lower 48 economy is right now. So I want to point out, though, look at the historical trends. The peak since 2006 was back in 2010, when Anchorage unemployment rose to 6.6%. There was no recession going on then. And then statewide, it was 7.9%, still a full percent above where we are today. That's a little different story than you might glean from the headlines that you may read about this month's unemployment rate is the highest for Alaska. Alaska is the highest in the nation, is the highest unemployment rate in the country. Yeah. But in terms of trending, in terms of what we've seen in the past, it is nowhere near the worst we've seen. So I'm not trying to belittle the fact that this is not an unemployment rate that we want to see. We don't. We want to see better unemployment. But for Anchorage, we're basically at or very just a little bit above full employment. And for the state, we're back to what we normally expect on an average year in our state. So just, you know, don't get caught up in those monthly numbers. Keep an eye on the annual trending and where the average is going. Let's talk about population. We're going to lose about 1,500 people in 2018. That's what we lost in 2017. That's our projection. About 0.5% last year, 0.5% this year. That means we're going to, you know, lose 1% since the last time we saw population growth in 2015. This is an effect of the recession. This is one of the things that we have to be cognizant of, is that people are leaving our town for the lower 48. Some are for better opportunities, 4.4% national average unemployment. Hot markets in Seattle and other parts of the country where jobs are there in aplenty. And if you've got skills, you can get employed. And it's not quite as expensive down there in some of those cities as it is up here. I mean, we are the 20th most expensive city in the United States according to the cost of living index, mainly because of housing and then with a secondary of healthcare. So those are issues that we need to work on through our live, work, play efforts. I would note also that part of this decline in population is the continued flight to the valley for cheaper housing. 37,000 people, according to the IRS, get their main paycheck from Anchorage that live in the valley, just to give you a sense of proportion and scale. So yes, another year of population decline. Oil and gas employment, we should stay even, flat, if everything goes right for the jobs based here in Anchorage in 2018. We've been doing a lot of work looking at the different projects that are being proposed. You'll see a whole list of them in the report. We think that there's some momentum going there that isn't necessarily going to grow jobs, but at least will stop the declines in jobs in oil and gas. And you can see the price line trend in terms of the price of a barrel and how the jobs tend to chase that price of barrel. So now we're down, last year is an average sale, average price for oil at $54 a barrel. Anchorage healthcare employment's gonna go up. Imagine that, I just said it again. I'm gonna go up another 600 jobs, that's great. But again, and we are glad that those people are employed, and we are glad that those companies are doing so well. But we are cautious about the fact that sooner or later, we're going to have to grapple with these issues, and there may be impacts on these numbers. But you can see the growth curve. Since 2006 to now, we've added over 7,000 jobs in healthcare. It's pretty amazing, pretty amazing. Over 53% of the workforce in healthcare in our state resides in Anchorage. So just keep that in mind. Transportation is going to go up just slightly. We think improving numbers at the airport, at the port of Anchorage. We're seeing a little more container traffic, a little more fuel traffic at the port. That's great for our good friends in the ocean transportation business. We're seeing good numbers in regards to air cargo, and passenger numbers are looking really good thanks to the tourism outlook for this year. So overall, we think that transportation should have a reasonably solid year this year. Professional and business services, the job losses should narrow even more. We should only lose a couple of hundred jobs this year. And quite honestly, there's reasonable odds that that might even come out flat by the end of the year. But we just felt that there was still a little bit of downward momentum in this particular sector. It's basically taking us back to before the oil price boom that we just ended with the crash that took about 5 years to cycle through. Construction, same story. These are really steep declines. These are the lowest numbers we've seen in quite some time for Anchorage construction employment. There's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines, although, as the mayor mentioned, there are projects that are coming out onto the street now that are looking to deploy risk-tolerant developers who are willing to risk that the legislature will do no harm in their funding policies and tax policies. And as a result, they're taking a chance that this is a good time to invest. They're trying to buy at the bottom of the cycle. Who wouldn't if you had some, you know, if you had reasonable certainty? And we believe that the bottom of the cycle is starting to manifest itself this coming year. I will say that out loud. We're seeing good competitive bidding in the construction industry, which is bringing in bids lower than expected, which makes it more of a buying opportunity. So the question you have to ask yourselves in this room is, if you've got capital projects that you're sitting on, are you missing an opportunity by not taking advantage of the buying opportunity and the competitive nature of the bids that are being seen right now? And is the risk of what the legislature may or may not do worth risking in the face of this potential buying opportunity? So those are things to think about. Leisure and hospitality, we're going to see a slight decline there, and it's mainly in the food services sector. Restaurants are having a tough time in the off-season outside of tourism. And we've seen a lot of media on that here recently, and we think that that's going to continue. We may see some of your or my favorite restaurants not here at the end of 2018. There are some challenges out there. So if you've been holding back on going out to eat to one of your favorite restaurants, I'd suggest maybe it's time to go out and have a meal, because we need to support this industry. It's an important industry to us. Retail trade employment. Okay, we've seen the horror stories in recent press about the challenges that we've faced with the Sears announcement and with the Sam's Club announcements. First and foremost, those two announcements were driven by national issues, having nothing really to do, even with the current recession that we have going on. This was just kind of a last little factor in that process. Those companies' business models were not working here in the way that they wanted them to, and they pulled the plug on those three stores. And I feel really bad for the loss of jobs for those employees. We're hearing some good things about those employees being picked up by other companies. That's good. We want to make sure that they're all gainfully employed by the time this process is over with. However, I want to tell you that we have really strong retailers in our community. We have really strong retail centers in our community. Diamond Mall, Takotnu, Fifth Avenue Mall, Glen Square, Northern Lights Center. These are all very good companies competing to bring in really great retailers who know what they're doing. And in Alaska, we still love us some retail. We like to get out and shop. We don't, you know, a screen's great. If it's really cold and nasty outside, you may be more inclined to go to your screen. But we do like to go down to our local stores, and we're seeing a lot of good success stories in retail. We are hearing rumors that some of the facilities that I just mentioned that are going to be closed, there are interested new tenants. Nothing that I can confirm, but as soon as we can say something with legitimate authority, we will do so. And if somebody else beats us to it, great. But we think that there is some positive news coming on the horizon in regards to those, at least a couple of those facilities. We also know of other retailers coming to us. I know the mayor mentioned a couple with Dave & Buster's on the restaurant side, but also Duluth Trading Company. I'm a big fan of their products. I won't start naming them off right now. It's not a sales pitch. But what I will say also is that we've got Black Diamond Equipment coming. If you're an extreme sports enthusiast, that's a pretty big deal. That's about 50 employees. They're going to be opening up just in time for the Iditarod. And we've got several other national retailers that are looking at the local community. And then we're seeing any number of new marijuana businesses opening up. And that is employing people. And that is a growing part of our manufacturing sector. And then you throw in the breweries, which are also a very important new element of our manufacturing sector. And our small but feisty manufacturing industry sector in our economy is starting to see some positive signs. They won't show up in the federal numbers because the feds won't count marijuana businesses. But we do. So just keep that in mind. See the little red squiggly bar? That's the tracking the price of the permanent fund, the value of the permanent fund on an annual basis. I've had a few people come up and walk up to me and tell me that with cutting the permanent fund in half, it's going to cost us thousands of retail jobs in Anchorage. Look at the graph, look at the number of retail jobs, and tell me how that logic works. Hasn't happened yet. The permanent fund is an important part of our economy. It adds $600 million to our state's economy. A lot of that permanent fund is spent on paying off bills, going into savings, or paying for education. A chunk of it goes to paying for stuff. But it is not the driver of our one-plus billion-dollar retail economy in Anchorage as part of our gross city product. So just keep that in mind. I like to make sure that we're on the same playing field when it comes to the facts. Financial activities are continuing to decline. We'll lose another 100. Same story. Online banking, online mortgages, definitely challenging the business model of bricks and mortar. Anchorage government employment will go down. This is combined federal, state, and local. It's mainly the state piece that will account for this decline of 200 jobs. So in summary, we're going to see more job losses, about 1,000 less jobs in 2018, a third year of recession. Could have avoided it if the state had gotten its act together, but it is what it is. It's the reverberation effect of the previous 2 years of the recession. We believe that the recession is going to probably peter out towards the end of 2018 or early 2019. So there is a distant light at the end of the tunnel, and it's getting a little closer. But we have some challenges that we have to overcome, and we have to keep those in mind. There are some positive signs in the oil and gas industry. Joe Marushak will talk about that here in just a moment. I won't steal his fire other than to say that there are no guarantees in any of that, given the somewhat lack of clarity on where things are going to go in terms of how to fund state government. We do have some developers with a risk tolerance that are putting money on the table, a little over $300 million in projects. That is, once again, raising the question that you all need to think about, is now a buying opportunity? I'm not telling you that it is, but I think we need to be thinking about that. Sometimes get caught in the weeds of the recession and we lose sight of the fact that the recession is not a permanent thing. Please God, not a permanent thing. And finally, the lack of a state fiscal plan is just pretty much the big issue. I mean, we could talk about all the other things, and that's nipping around the edges. But until the legislature and the governor come together on a solution, we're going to continue to deal with these challenges, and money is going to continue to remain on the sideline that would be deploying otherwise in our economy and getting us back on track for growth. That's the Cliff Notes version. Thank you so much. I appreciate your attention on this. Again, all the reports that I just covered are available in great detail on the website at aedcweb.com. Thank you.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. We've just heard the 2018 economic forecast for Anchorage, presented by Bill Popp of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. This luncheon was hosted by the AEDC at the Dena'ina Center on January 31st. We're going back to Bill Popp for introductions to the keynote speakers.
All right, now it is my distinct pleasure to introduce our two keynote speakers, Joe Marushak, president of ConocoPhillips Alaska, and Mr. Ron Duncan, co-founder and CEO of GCI. We're asking them now to come up to the stage. Let me do some introductions here. Ron Duncan is a true success story of Alaska entrepreneurship. Since coming to Alaska in 1977, Ron has left his mark on the state. In the 37 years since he and his partner Bob Walp started GCI here in Anchorage, the company has evolved from a bright idea into what is now Alaska's largest telecommunications provider with more than 2,000 employees and almost $1 billion in annual revenues. Since joining Phillips Petroleum, there's a ghost from the past, Phillips Petroleum in 1982 as an engineer in Casper, Wyoming, Joe Marushak has served in several leadership roles at ConocoPhillips, from president of ConocoPhillips Canada to president of ConocoPhillips Asia and Middle East, gathering expertise from all around the world that is invaluable to all of us here in Alaska. Joe has held his current role as president of ConocoPhillips Alaska since 2015. Now, these gentlemen are recognized as key leaders of the Alaska business community, and today they'll share their views on two of our foundational industries, the economy, and what the future may hold. Joe will speak first, followed by Ron, and then they will both participate in a brief Q&A session with you, the audience. Now, at your tables are note cards. Please write down your questions, hold the question card up in the air, and volunteers will be by shortly to collect them. They will run them up to me, and I will be aggregating the questions to get as many as we can get done in the time that we have allotted for the Q&A session. So without further ado, please welcome to the lectern, Mr. Joe Marushak. It is live. Right arrow advances.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be with you today here, and it was really good to come after Bill because I saw that business confidence index, and I think hopefully I can help with that a little bit today. That's what I'm going to talk about anyway. I'm going to talk about what we're doing at ConocoPhillips and then what industry is doing and the potential there, but then talk about the risks that we see as well. So with that, I'll certainly be making forward-looking statements today, so please don't trade off anything I say. The future could be will be substantially different, I suspect. So this slide here just demonstrates, is intended to demonstrate how we're all in the oil industry. There's about 46,000, McDowell Group did this work for us, there's about 46,000 employees in Alaska that are directly with the oil industry or support industry or induced by the oil industry. There's also another 58,000 that are employed through the revenues that are generated and taxes from the oil industry. All in, about 32% of all employment is tied to oil and gas. That's why I say we're all in the oil and gas industry. If we don't have a healthy oil and gas industry, it's very difficult for me to see how we'll have other industries in Alaska that are healthy. And for each direct job that we've got in Alaska, we support, there creates another 22 jobs. So it's very leveraging. Now I'm going to talk just a little bit about what we're trying to do in 2018, and then I'll mention how much the value of that asset that we've got bringing in there. So this year we're bringing on what we call GMT1, which is Greater Moose's Tooth 1. To give you an idea, there's 25 to 30,000 barrels a day that'll start being produced in the fourth quarter of 2018 from that project there. TAPS right now is running about 527,000 barrels a day, so you can see this is incremental production that's really quite important that'll start coming on this year. We're supporting about 700 construction jobs, and the total cost of this project is about $1 billion. We're also permitting GMT2 right now. That's a step out from GMT1. This is all through our Alpine area in NPRA. It'll be about 30,000 barrels a day as well. First production will be about, oil will be about 2021. It'll also create about 700 jobs, support 700 jobs during that construction period, and cost about $1.5 billion. Fjord West, we're bringing on a new rig, a brand new rig that we're building right now, Doyon's building for us, and it'll be here in 2022. That's an extended reach drilling rig, and with that, we'll be able to reach out from one 12-acre pad, 33,000 feet. So we'll be able to get to areas that have never been able to be produced before. It's very exciting for us. Another 20,000 barrels a day. And then last year we announced our Willow discovery, which is about 100,000 barrels a day, we believe, with first oil possible as soon as 2023. That would be a multi-billion dollar investment. So when I say multi-billion dollars, we're thinking $4-5 billion right now. We're actually looking at what that might cost. And this doesn't even include the exploration program we're doing this year. So we'll drill 5 exploration wells this year. That's the most exploration that we've done in Alaska since 2002. Now the next slide is really the important slide for all of you, because this tells you what is possible. And these aren't just figments of our imagination. There's line of sight to not only these ConocoPhillips projects, but the other projects that I'm going to talk to you a little bit about too. So let me start up first with the ones we've talked about there. GMT-1, GMT-2, Fjord West, those could all be about 30,000 barrels a day. You add to that our Putu and the two of our exploration wells that we're doing are called Putu and Stony, and those would be about, could be about 20, 25,000 barrels a day. We're also drilling 3 exploration wells in Willow. Willow could be 100,000 barrels a day. We've got over 1 million acres of land available that we've got leased, so we've got a long opportunity of potential exploration out there. Then you add to that some of the really exciting things that the other companies are doing. So Pikka Oil Search out of Australia just recently bought into Pikka. Pikka could be 100,000 barrels a day. Kalis Nunuk has a development out there, could be 20, 30, 40,000 barrels a day. Brooks Range just announced that they believe that their Mustang could be 12,000 barrels a day. Eni is drilling an exploration well, and then Hillcorp is developing Liberty, which could be 60 to 70,000 barrels a day. So these don't all come on at the same time. They could all come on with different ramp rates and come off a little bit. But if you just add up the announced peak rates off of those projects, it could be as much as 400,000 barrels a day of new production. So I'm not saying add. I'm not saying add the our current TAPS 527 and 400 to that, but I am saying there's 400,000 barrels a day of potential new production out there. And in addition to that, we've got other projects that could add to our economy there. The Alaska Gas Pipeline, we're very interested in selling gas from the North Slope into that project. And then, of course, ANWR is out there. And we can't forget, we're still developing our legacy fields. Right now, we're drilling News 1H. We've got 2 of our high-tech pentalaterals that we're drilling right now, and we've got 2 more producers to go and something like 10 or 15 water injectors to go. Alpine, Kuparuk, and Prudhoe Bay, those to me are the brains, heart, and lung of the North Slope. The rest of this isn't going to work unless you have a healthy base development. So with all that, what could possibly go wrong? Well, one thing that could go wrong is something we've been competing with up here for several years now, which is the shale revolution. The shale revolution is true. And you can look at either Bakken, Powder River, Permian, Eagleford. You just look at the numbers out there. Those are huge, huge development opportunities. They're all closer to the market. They're all easier to permit. They're all lower cost of supply. But we're in the game. We have dropped our costs substantially in Alaska, and we're in the game. The biggest concern that I have is a lack of a stable fiscal government. And that's actually the one that we can control also. So how do we break down our investment? I'd like to share with you what's at risk here. So our capital program in 2017 up here was about $800 million. We're always going to do maintenance on our facilities. We're always going to make sure they're safe. We're also always going to make sure they're environmentally sound. But that's only about $200 million of our capital investment. There's $600 million that's discretionary. $600 million that will go to GMT-1, GMT-2, Willow. And actually, those numbers will have to go up if we're successful with developing these projects. Our operating expense is about $1 billion. And I can tell you with a great deal of certainty, if we're not doing development projects, we don't need the 1,000 direct employees that we've got in ConocoPhillips and that $1 billion of operating expense. We can maintain the existing fields with a lot less cost than that. What does our budget do? It employs 840 Alaskan companies, Alaska contractors, and this year accounts for about 1,100 employees on the slope that we're starting right now during our winter season. We're in the game, costs have come down, and the tax change in 2013 is working. So in 2013, SB 21 passed. The red line was the decline curve we were on under the old tax system. The gold that you see there is the increased production that's come on since SB 21 passed. And this is not our projection, this is the actual state budget book projections out there. So the last 2 years, we've actually been able to increase production off the North Slope. And you can see that we can keep that, we believe we can keep that flat with a stable fiscal system. And the bottom line on this, again, as we're all in the oil business here, more oil production means more royalties, more jobs, and a stronger economy. So I'm going to close with this last slide here. And really our message here is that our oil and gas business, the investments that we make in this business, really drive the state of Alaska. We need a long-term budget solution, but we need to leave the core tax system in place. We're not asking for changes to it. We're not asking for any improvements to it. Just keep it in place. Because the key to ensuring continued investment in this state is a stable, competitive fiscal framework. We're a high-cost producer here. We're in the game, but we're a high-cost producer. And taxes are certainly a big part of the cost game for us. So as we move into 2018, I would just like to leave you with a closing statement here. The elections matter. There's consequences to elections. Please ask the candidates what they're doing to maintain a stable, competitive investment climate. Because in our business, it's just math. It's nothing more than math. If you increase the taxes, our costs go up. If our costs go up, we redo the economics. If we redo the economics and take our projects down to compete with the lower 48 projects, they drop below the line and we don't get funded. If we don't get funded, there's less jobs and there's less revenue for the state of Alaska. Thank you.
You are listening to the keynote speakers from this year's Economic Forecast for Anchorage. We just heard from Joe Marushak of ConocoPhillips Alaska. Coming up next is Ron Duncan of GCI.
Thank you, and thank you for the optimism, Joe. I'll try not to be too disappointing following the strong, upbeat remarks there that we heard from our most important industrial sector in Alaska. I'm pleased to be here today. I'm delighted to be addressing this audience. It wasn't mentioned, but way back in the distance past, I was an AEDC chair, and GCI has been a sponsor of AEDC for probably close to 30 years now, and we think this organization does vital work for Anchorage and for the state as a whole, and it certainly pleases me to be able to be here today and talk about what's probably not the best economic report we've ever seen out of this organization. There was a New York Times article over the weekend that was extolling the fact that every major economy on Earth is expanding at once right now. It's a synchronous wave of growth that's creating jobs, lifting fortunes, growing business confidence, which leads to more hiring, more investment, and more consumer spending. Global growth is being driven by a recovery in resource prices, new investment, increased confidence, and U.S. tax reform. In Alaska, as you've heard this morning, the only good news is that the pace of decline is moderating. But the decline is still very real. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who runs a highly successful retail business here in the state. He was telling me that his business is down 20% in the last 2 years. I have other friends whose businesses are down 20 to 40%. At 40%, that's a close to existential threat to some businesses that have been around up here for 20 or 30 years. The decline that we are experiencing, even though it's moderating, has very real consequences for all of us. In a way, it's puzzling why Alaska isn't growing right now. Why aren't we sharing in the global growth? An external view of our economic environment would suggest that we should be doing pretty well right now. Oil prices have more than doubled from their lows of 2 or 3 years ago, and oil revenue to the state treasury has rebounded slightly. As Joe mentioned, technology-driven production costs for Alaska continue to decline and have driven Alaska oil down to levels of Alaska oil down to levels that are profitable even at last year's lower prices. Companies have announced many new discoveries which should be economic at current prices. Investment in the oil sector is up this year for the first time in several years, and that's a great thing. Mining is growing too, with a new tract under exploration at Fort Knox, continued progress on Donlin, and expansion at Red Dog. The regulatory climate in Alaska is better than it has ever been in recent memory. In the last year, we've resolved structural issues that we've seen as impediments to the Alaska economy for several decades. ANWR is finally on a path to development. We're seeing exploration and production increasing out of NPRA. With Ryan Zinke, we have the best Secretary of Interior for Alaska that we've had since Wally Hickel. And he's populated his administration in the Department of Interior with people who know Alaska well and who will support our interests. While not a large driver of economic and growth in the state, even intractable problems like the King Cove Road appear to be on the way to resolution. The federal government is massively increasing its investment in the state of Alaska. The new F-35 wing at Eielson Air Force Base will bring almost 3,000 new residents to the Fairbanks area and more than 1,500 new jobs. There's a $2 billion expansion underway at Fort Greely to support ballistic missile defense. The uncertainty of the geopolitical situation in Asia is reinforcing Alaska's key geopolitical strategic role as the lead in defending North America, and that will be good for the Alaska economy over the next decade. Over the holiday, I spent some time with our junior Senator Dan Sullivan, and he was ebullient about what our congressional delegation has accomplished in the last year, and just felt that that had to have enormous positive consequences for the Alaska economy. And indeed, we owe the delegation a huge vote of thanks. In a year, they have removed decades of regulatory blockage and regulatory impediments to our economy. Ted Stevens would be proud of what we've accomplished in the last 12 months. Beyond our resource industries and the federal government, I know that was for Ted. Beyond our resource industries and the federal government, there are other promising signs too. The fishing industry is strong. Tourism is growing well with the world economy. Air cargo is thriving off the expansion in online commerce and global growth. Alaska should be an attractive place to invest. We're a first world economy. We're dollar based. We have a good legal system, a solid yet underutilized infrastructure. Much of what's needed to grow our economy is already in place. We have a transportation system, road, rail, and air. We have a first-class healthcare system. We have a state-of-the-art telecommunications network that serves admirably throughout the entire state. GCI alone has invested more than $3 billion in that network, and our competitors have added $1 billion apiece. 75% of Alaskans have access to 1 gig home internet service, versus only 18% of residents in the lower 48 who have similar access. Broadband's expanding in rural Alaska too. In an example of private investment operating in partnership with sensible government policies, there have been dramatic expansions in rural broadband capacity and connectivity in the last few years. We've continued to build out our $350 million Terra microwave network throughout rural Alaska, and our competitors have been investing in terrestrial connectivity too. These investments bring opportunity for new business and growth to rural Alaska. Hopefully, the policies that have led to this investment won't be changed in the face of success. All of the above are good news for the economy. Increased resource development, rapidly expanding federal investment, growing basic industries like fishing, air cargo, and tourism, and a solid platform to support new business should be a strong predicate for growth. So what's happening? Why do Alaskan employment numbers continue to drop? Why is our population decreasing as productive members of our workforce move out of state to find better opportunities elsewhere? Our economy continues to languish because we've cut off the investment that we need to grow. Economic growth is primarily a result of investment, both private and public. Currently, only one out of three investment engines is operating in Alaska. The federal government is ramping up and investing strongly, with billions at Eielson and Fort Greeley. The state government is virtually gone. State capital spending is almost non-existent, with a capital budget that's down more than 85% over the last 5 years and is insufficient to even maintain existing state infrastructure. Private investment, both resource-based and other, is also down very materially. GCI is one of the largest investors in Alaska, we still are, but our capital spending is down 25% over the last 2 years. Our employment is down as a result as well. Many other businesses are in the same situation, which results in the loss of employment and shrinking GDP from the industries that used to be driving the growth in the economy. There's an overhang on our economy that's creating uncertainty, destroying confidence, stifling investment, and limiting our growth. It won't surprise you, it's been said many times today, it's the state fiscal situation. On a net assets per capita basis, we have the wealthiest state in the country. We have more than $66 billion in our savings account. Earnings from financial assets are now the largest single source of state revenue. Yet, we have a $3 billion structural deficit that we can't seem to address. Over the last 5 years, we've frittered away more than $16 billion of our savings while we've been arguing about a plan to fill that gap. Last year, we almost shut down the state government, and with it, the fishing industry and its $1 billion annual contribution to the state, because we couldn't agree on a plan. At the end of the day, we punted and drained the savings accounts further. The absence of a fiscal plan creates great uncertainty about our economic future. That uncertainty is reflected in the business confidence ratings that were presented earlier. While they're up, they're still at best in the neutral range, and as you saw, the one on future economic prospects isn't even in the neutral range today. A recent survey that I saw asking people about their perceptions of the Alaska economy showed that 65% of Alaskans thought the state was on the wrong track. In the face of this uncertainty, the private sector has substantially reduced investment, and consequently employment has come down, which is what contributes to our current recession. It's hard to feel comfortable investing more in Alaska until we can see a path to fiscal stability. The more we drain our savings without a plan, the less private business will be willing to invest. The problem is particularly frustrating because the math behind it is not difficult to solve. Absent an unsustainable level of taxes or budget cuts, there is no solution that does not involve using some earnings of the permanent fund. We're fortunate now that we have the resources to use earnings from the permanent fund and still pay a healthy dividend. But no matter what else we do with a $3 billion gap, earnings from the permanent fund are going to have to fill 80% of that gap. The long-run solution will undoubtedly include other elements, cuts, taxes, or both, but they contribute a much smaller portion and are not essential now to stem the fiscal uncertainty that will boost our economic growth. If we start to use the earnings in a sustainable way before we drain away all of our other savings, then we have a chance to restore the business confidence. If we drain away all our readily accessible savings and start dipping into the earnings reserve without a structure or a plan, we may indeed bust the bank and face a cataclysmic shortfall in funding. The risk of that potential endpoint is what gives great pause to those of us who must make decisions about the future for long-term investment in Alaska. In many ways, we're sacrificing stability for perfection. We lack the investment we need to grow because we can't collectively agree on how to use our public wealth. This is purely a self-inflicted problem. The majority agree that the cornerstone of any solution must be sustainable use of permanent fund earnings. But that necessary first step has become the bargaining chit for those who have divergent views of the ideal result, i.e. deep budget cuts versus taxes. Each side is willing to hold our economy hostage to achieve its vision of a perfect solution, and each year that there is no resolution, we drain our savings further and limit our options. When that happens, investment declines, more jobs are eliminated, and the economy shrinks further. When Governor Walker first came into office, He convened a series of sessions around the state with community and business leaders. At those sessions, he and Budget Director Pat Pitney presented an overview of Alaska's grim fiscal situation and went through a menu of choices that we faced. At the end of a session that I was privileged to participate in, the governor went around the room and asked people for their reactions. The responses were eerily similar. There were about 30 people in the room, and almost every response began, "Well, I can understand the need to use a portion of the earnings, but before we do that, we have to," and then fill in the blank with 30 different have-tos, whether it was deep cuts to spending, substantial tax increases, more funding for the university, a better road system, more funding for public education. Everybody in the room had a predicate to the one thing that was necessary to fill the 80% of the gap. The last person to speak is a friend of mine, a very successful Anchorage businessman and entrepreneur, and he decided to respond with an analogy. He said, "This is amazing. It's like we're in a small craft in the middle of the Gulf of Alaska, surrounded by a massive storm. Our boat is taking on water at an alarming rate, and we desperately need to find a safe harbor. We should either be below the decks, operating the pumps to keep the ship afloat, or navigating the shortest course to safety. Instead, we're standing around on the deck, arguing about what color to paint the rails and debating whether we need new windshield wipers for the wheelhouse." Three years into the current crisis, the storm hasn't really abated. Our savings are nearly gone, and we're no closer to a safe harbor. I'm convinced there's a tremendously bright future for the state of Alaska, in large part because of the stuff that Joe just talked about. We are a resource-rich state. We have a tremendous opportunity to supply materials that the rest of the world needs. All we have to do is learn how to govern ourselves. The federal government's investing heavily in Alaska. Tourism and fisheries are growing. We have unutilized infrastructure that can support substantial growth at little additional cost. If we start to fix the fiscal problem by making sustainable draws from the earnings reserve before we run out of savings, I believe that confidence in the private sector will come back very rapidly, and you'll see a quick rebound in that missing investment, followed very shortly by increased employment and a return to growth. There's no reason why we can't be growing as fast or faster than the rest of the world. It really is up to us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Addressing Alaskans today on Alaska Public Media. We've been hearing the 2018 economic forecast for Anchorage, presented by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. We first heard from AEDC President and CEO Bill Popp with this year's report. Then we heard from keynote speakers Joe Marushak of ConocoPhillips Alaska and Ron Duncan of GCI. You can find links to all of the reports on alaskapublic.org. I'm your host and producer for Addressing Alaskans, Eric Bork, for KSKA Anchorage.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.